welcome back to Consider This. I'm Lucy Idris with Ms. Sharad Kutan. Now, the formation of the cabinet under Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's administration, are we likely to see a return to Barisan Nasional era policies? To discuss this further, we have joining us on the line Tricia Yeo, fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or better known as IDEAS. Tricia, thank you for joining us this evening. Now, I've read your piece, your opinion piece, that explores the immediate consequences of the new government under Muhyiddin Yassin's leadership. Now, could you help us understand why you think that Malaysia could see a return of BN, Barisan Nasional politics and public policies?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me on. Well, let me say that I wrote two opinion pieces. I'm not sure which one you're referring to, before Muhyiddin actually formed his cabinet. So I was just using the assumption based on the fact that Perikatan Nasional is consisting of UMNO in terms of the predominant numbers of members of parliament, and then Bersatu, which, of course, we know consists of members who were former UMNO members, and then you have PAS, which is a relatively new kid on the block, as it were. But I based the assumptions on the fact that the UMNO policies of the past were the sort of tried, tested, and true methods of keeping the votes while the Barisan Nasional was in power for its many years as the single dominant party. So that was my basis of understanding. And I mean, I can unpack that for now, unless you have other further questions.
Yeah, well, we do in fact have many questions for you, Tricia. Going to keep you on for some time. Tricia, this government has come in, and Muhyiddin's announced that and framed the announcement of the lineup by talking about the economic challenges ahead. Very different from Pakatan Harapan that came on the back of a reform agenda, very elaborate one with a manifesto, you know, running into hundreds of pages. What do you think is going to be the main agenda? I mean, apart from what is said, what do you think is going to be the imperatives for this particular government?
Well, I think the situation is very different. When Pakatan Harapan came into power, it was on the back of the 1MDB case and the Najib corruption scandal and so on. So obviously that was the sort of winning formula that it had that, you know, allowed it to ride into power. What the Perikatan Nasional inherits now is a very different kind of Malaysia. I think it's a country that is going through a lot more economic turbulence than we were just, you know, a short 1.5 years ago. You're looking at already, you know, having to plug an even bigger fiscal deficit, despite the fact that the Pakatan Harapan's two budgets had tried to be a little bit more disciplined and efficient in its budget. So, and then you've got also, you know, a country that's dealing with the international ramifications of, say, the U.S.-China trade war, the COVID-19 over the last few months, and we haven't seen the worst of it, and I think experts are saying that it's going to last through the entire year. So what's this going to do to the business environment, the economy? And on top of that, you have the big whammy of the news a couple of days ago about the oil prices, you know, going down because of what happened in the OPEC. So Malaysia is quite highly dependent on its natural resources. Petronas has been a real contributor to our economy, to our federal government funds. So you really have this sort of triple whammy that this government is coming into, and I think that will have to take priority. I would be really interested to see whether they will start exploring the possibility of returning the GST, because that's one of the immediate ways that, you know, it can actually introduce, well, it's basically a return of what the BN had done before.
Well, Tricia, I just want to pick up on something you said earlier. You know, you said these UMNO policies were tried and tested to keep them in power for so long. And when I think about BN era policies, I think of handouts and subsidies and, you know, cash is king way of thinking. How is that going to be balanced against all these challenges that you put forth? I mean, do you think that GST is likely going to be an option they will consider, or are there other options they can consider?
I think GST is one that will probably be the most convenient because the institutions had been in place before the start of, you know, public training and education had already been there. But you're right in that it cannot be as, you know, lucrative as perhaps the olden days sort of gravy train situations were in the past. You know, I think a lot of scholars have already documented the way in which the patronage networks all the way from the federal government down to the states and the local levels, how they basically oil the political machinery of things. And I think the expectation that now that UMNO is back in power, the expectation from people who have benefited in the past would still be there. But somehow or other, Muhyiddin and his colleagues within the new government will have to kind of regulate those sorts of pressures, right, and to, you know, convince the recipients of these benefits in the past that it's not going to be quite the same situation, and the economy, and I think that's why he stressed that at the very beginning, right, the economy has to come first.
Okay. Well, Tricia, you know, I'm just wondering, when the GST was removed the first time around, there was a lot of uncertainty within the business community. How do you think, you know, if a return to GST is put forth, how do you think that will go down with the public?
I don't think it will go well. I think it's already, we are seeing a struggling economy. We know that retail, F&B, you know, anywhere you go, you can see the effects of that. But I think if the government is able to frame it in a way that actually talks about this is really about the government coffers, and you know, in fact, the economists will also say that the GST is actually a lot more of a systematic and regulated way. It's a much more broad-based tax, consumption tax. And maybe one way to mitigate the negative effects will be to say that, okay, we'll bring it back, but we will reduce the rates. So it's kind of trying to soften the blow in that sense.
Right.
And what about the question of institutional reforms? This government has not signaled anything on that score. And in fact, we don't have, as it were, something to measure the performance against since they don't have a manifesto. What do you think, and especially from the, kind of looking at an observer's point of view, how important is institutional reform to getting the economy right or getting education right? All the things that were talked about in the previous administration.
Yes, I mean, certainly, I think institutional reforms should be the priority, because essentially, if you don't address that, then there's not going to be investor confidence from abroad. And as you say, rightly, the education system would be affected as well. But again, I think it's a matter of how, I think it's a matter of like the language that they use. So Muhyiddin sort of tried to tread a little bit on that path by talking about transparency and good governance or anti-corruption in his first speech. I mean, he said that while at the same time talking about the need for like a stable, peaceful, prosperous society, right, which is the kind of language that Barisan Nasional was more accustomed to using. So I think my short answer is that I think there is some semblance of him wanting to do what is right. And in a sense, it's good that he screened all the cabinet members through MACC first, and you can see that the selection of the cabinet members from UMNO as well are really not the top-notch of the party leaders at all. And I suppose this has got to do with the fact that many of them are being investigated, right, for corruption, which is linked to 1MDB cases and so on. I think what he will have difficulties in will be to convince the rest of his cabinet and his partners that institutional reforms are actually going to be important as well. So I think he's actually treading quite a thin line, and the dynamics between the three parties are not as simple as people would like to think. I know that some analysts have, you know, just called this like a Bumiputra cabinet, but I don't think it's that simple. I mean, they do have competing interests. They have competing electoral interests as well. And so, you know, once you put them together in coalition, then you will see some of those cracks start to form.
Thank you so much, Tricia, for speaking with us this evening, sharing those insights with us. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more on Consider This, so don't go away.